This video was made possible by CuriosityStream. Watch all of my videos early and ad-free, along with my upcoming original series exclusively on Nebula, which you can get access to for $15 a year through the bundle deal at curiositystream.com/reallifelore. There is perhaps no single historical figure more controversial in British history than Oliver Cromwell, nor has anyone's disembodied head gone on a stranger journey. In the mid-17th century, England became embroiled in a civil war between supporters of the Parliament and supporters of the King. Cromwell was a prominent general who supported the Parliament, and upon their victory in 1649, he personally signed the death warrant that led to the beheading of King Charles I, oversaw the abolition of the English monarchy, the transition of England into a republic, the military conquest of Ireland, and, in 1653, was appointed Lord Protector of all of Britain, effectively becoming a new absolute monarch in his own right. He would rule all of the British Isles in this way for 5 years until his own death from natural causes in 1658, which rather promptly led to the complete destruction of his entire regime. Initially, Cromwell's body and funeral were treated with all the respect and grandeur of every English monarch who came before him. His body was embalmed, laid in state, and buried prominently in Westminster Abbey after an elaborate funeral procession through London. But none of this lasted for long, because unfortunately for Cromwell's body and legacy, things were about to get real weird. The king he had executed 9 years previously had a son who was living in exile, who then promptly returned to England shortly after Cromwell's death to take the country right back over. He was successful and restored the English monarchy as Charles II after over 11 years of absence, and perhaps a bit understandably upset by the execution of his father and his forced decade in exile, he was in the mood for some vengeance. 12 still surviving men who had participated in the trial and execution of his father were rounded up and found guilty of regicide, for which the punishment was hanging, drawing, and quartering. A horrifically brutal execution technique that went like this for each of them. They would be stripped naked, tied to a wooden panel, and dragged through the streets of London by horse to the place of execution. They would then be hanged by the neck, right up until the point they were almost dead, and then cut back down. They would then get pinned to a table, have their bowels pulled out of their abdomen, and to add insult to injury, they would be emasculated. Literally, their manhoods would be chopped off. And all of this was, of course, while they're still alive. Finally, eventually, they would be killed by beheading by sword. And then, for extra measure, their body was torn apart into 4 pieces by horses before getting dumped into a ditch somewhere and forgotten. Yeesh. As horrific and brutal as these executions were, Charles II couldn't get his hands on the main people responsible for his father's death like Cromwell, because obviously they were already dead. Except, just kidding, that didn't actually stop him. He had Cromwell's body ripped out of its resting place in Westminster, and had his corpse posthumously executed for high treason by hanging in the public square of London. Afterwards, the already dead corpse was taken down, the head was lopped off by an executioner, and the fascinatingly bizarre 300-year adventure of Cromwell's disembodied head would begin. To start, King Charles II had the head impaled on a spike and placed high above Westminster Hall in London as a warning to what happens to regicides. This was in 1661, and it remained up there for 20 continuous years until in 1681 it was briefly removed by construction workers for routine roof maintenance. But right after they were finished, they placed it back on the spike. Charles II himself died in 1685, and his son, James II, ascended to the throne next, who continued to keep the head high up above Westminster. However, sometime early in his reign between 1685 and 1688, it's believed that a great storm hit London that blew Cromwell's head off that spike and into the streets of London. For the next several decades, only circumstantial evidence has been put forward for where the head was. But, according to legend, it was discovered in the street by a guardsman who picked it up, took it home with him, and hid it in his chimney. The loss of Cromwell's head in the late 1680s was still significant in London, you see. James II was the grandson of the king Cromwell had executed, and so, a large reward was offered for the safe return of the head. Many people began searching across England for it, and the guardsman who took it for himself was allegedly too afraid to turn it in, because it would have meant confessing to stealing it in the first place. Eventually, a few decades later in 1710, after the heat had cooled off a bit, the head somehow fell into the possession of a Swiss guy named Claudius Dupuy, a collector of curiosities who had opened a museum in London. Evidently, Dupuy's museum was among the top tourist attractions in the city at the time, and the head remained a prominent display inside there for gawking tourists to look at until Dupuy died in 1738. After the museum closed following his death, it's not entirely clear what happened to Cromwell's head for a few years until it showed up again in the mid-1700s in the possession of a man named Samuel Russell, a failed comedian and well-known public drunkard. Allegedly, Russell was a distant relative of Cromwell's, and it's theorized that he may have purchased the head from the museum after Dupuy's death. But regardless of how it came into his possession, Russell was certainly the least respectful owner of it. During several drunken parties and gatherings, Russell would bring out the disembodied head of a man who once ruled the British Isles with absolute authority and passed it around to everybody like it was an inflatable beach ball at a concert. Unsurprisingly, tossing the head around at parties like that caused irreparable damage to the head's facial features over time, and it was getting less and less recognizable. Eventually broke and desperate for money, Russell attempted to sell the head to Sidney Sussex College, who, for some reason, wasn't interested in buying a deformed head that once belonged to the Lord Protector of England. Fortunately for him, a very prominent goldsmith and toy maker at the time, named James Cox, was interested for some reason, and he paid the equivalent of £5,600 in today's money to purchase the head from Russell. A century after Oliver Cromwell had died, and his head was being tossed around at parties and sold for the price of a used early 2000s Toyota Corolla. But apparently buying a head for £5,600 turned into a worthwhile investment for James Cox, because he sold it a few years later in 1799 for £7,400 in today's money to a group of three brothers who wanted to use the head in their new London exhibition of curiosities. Thousands of posters for the exhibition displaying an image of the head were printed, but it ended up becoming a financial failure for the brothers anyway. One of those brothers' daughters came into possession of the head next, who continued showing it to all kinds of people privately and attempted to sell it to multiple museums and colleges, all of whom, for some reason, refused. Eventually, in 1815, the daughter sold it privately for an undisclosed amount to a guy named Josiah Henry Wilkinson, who wanted it for some reason and who began the tradition of keeping the Cromwell head as a family heirloom for the next 1.5 centuries. Over these years, the Wilkinson family passed the head down from one generation to the next and subjected it to multiple scientific studies and examinations to determine if it really was the original head of Oliver Cromwell. In the 1930s, a 109-page scientific report was written about the head's authenticity that determined that it was, in fact, the actual original head of the former Lord Protector. Eventually, in 1957, Horace Wilkinson died and, by tradition, bequeathed the head to his son and heir, also named Horace Wilkinson. This Horace Wilkinson finally decided to do what nobody else had done with the head in the past 300 years. He buried it and put it to rest. And so, on the 25th of March, 1960, in a secret location at Sidney Sussex College, the head was finally placed into a box and buried, after a journey that spanned 299 years since 1661, when Cromwell's head was first lopped off of his already dead body, that saw an eccentric cast of owners tossing the head from one person to the next. The 3-century-long journey of Oliver Cromwell's disembodied head had finally come to a close. Unless, of course, someone decides to dig it back up. Again. Now, if you've made it this far into watching, you probably love all things real-life lore, and I'm certain you've probably already heard all about CuriosityStream, the documentary streaming service with thousands of videos on history, nature, science, and tons of other things.
Like The Real War of Thrones, an excellent 2-season, 10-episode documentary series that dives deep into the intrigue, betrayals, politics, and wars between the noble families of early modern Europe. It's an incredible series that will give you much more historical context than I can provide you in such a short video on YouTube.
But thanks to CuriosityStream, when you sign up for them, you'll also get access to Nebula, a streaming service made by educational creators like me, where we can safely publish our original, thoughtful content without any fears of getting demonetized or intentionally buried by an algorithm that doesn't support us like on YouTube. By signing up for CuriosityStream and Nebula, you are directly empowering real-life lore and dozens of other educational creators you probably know to make awesome, exclusive content that we wouldn't get the chance to make otherwise. Content like all of my own real-life lore videos that go up at least 24 hours early before they do on YouTube, and all without any ads or sponsorships. And exclusive content like my upcoming series Ghost Towns, a show where I take you directly to some of the world's most spooky and haunted abandoned places. Or Money, a game show hosted by Tom Scott and featuring a bunch of my creator friends in a series of psychological experiments that test their willingness to work together. Best of all though, CuriosityStream is offering Nebula subscribers 26% off just for you. In other words, that's two fantastic streaming services for less than $15 a year. So go ahead and sign up using the link in the description or by going to curiositystream.com/reallifelore. Watch cool content and support creators by watching stuff we've made just for you. Everyone wins. And as always, thank you for watching.